at facebook.com/mediasanctuary.
We are joined in the studio once again by Luke's daughter, Nathan, of Troy Letter.
Hey.
Hi.
Hi, everybody.
Hey, good to see you.
It was another great week in Troy, and I guess I'll start just with the beginning of my newsletter on Friday, if you got it, had this in it, but I reported the breaking and fascinating news that I took a walk on Friday, and the only reason I bring that up now, I guess, is because the city held a ribbon cutting for a trail that they recently restored over the summer with the help of volunteers. It's one of the trails in Prospect Park. That's sort of on the southwest corner, that kind of carves out the southwest corner of the park. It starts on Hill Street in South Troy, and it leads through the woods and ends up kind of at the top near the dilapidated swimming pool. But if you continue going, it actually takes you can actually walk all the way to Congress Street, and you sort of pass where the city may potentially in the future create a dog park, and it leads like right near Muza, the Polish beer garden kind of place. But anyway, when I went to take that walk, I noticed that the new sign that they had just installed and, you know, had pictures taken in front of only a few months ago had been removed. And I checked in with a city council member who told me that it had recently been basically ripped out of the ground and someone had like thrown it into the woods or something for reasons I don't know.
That's
for reasons why I don't know. But it's currently being repaired. So it'll be back soon, but right now it's just sort of otherwise without the sign, it just sort of looks like a vacant lot, in South Troy area, but rest assured the trail is still there and it might be a good time to check it out if you haven't done so already, because it's a sort of convenient link from South Troy to up on the Hill neighborhood, and you can walk through the park, and maybe one day you'll be able to walk your dog up there and bring it to a dog park. So something to look forward to. In more substantive news, I went to a land bank meeting. This is the Troy Community Land Bank. Mm-hmm. It's a public authority / nonprofit / it's largely funded by the state. I think it's received upwards of like $2 million from the state for the couple of years that's been in existence, a little bit from the city as well. And it's basically, its mission is to acquire and either knock down or stabilize and or renovate properties, especially in this area where we are right now in the North Central neighborhood, although it intends to expand its mission a bit in the catchment area that it focuses on, I think, into Lansingburg in the future. But the board hadn't met in a month. It had, for some reason, it didn't meet last month. So there was a lot of news to catch up on, one item of which was that 791 and 899 River Street, these are two multifamily homes that the land bank owns. Like I said a moment ago, the land bank usually acquires properties and then either stabilizes them or demolishes them. But recently, and I've talked about this on the show before, but recently they decided that maybe they want to try to do more substantive renovations before selling the properties. Mm-hmm. So these two properties, they have put out the TAP, a local design firm, has completed an RFP. They were going to put that out this week, according to what they said last week, and then they're going to select a contractor for the job at the regular meeting next month. So that's just those two properties are moving along. So they intend to renovate those. That's still the plan.
Right, to be the model properties.
Yeah, to kind of show off like what is possible with these sort of common two-family homes that you might find around Troy, and ways of, I think they want to do like a more kind of contemporary open floor plan. It'll be interesting to see, you know, when the bids come back, how much the contractors say it will cost them to do. That might determine whether they, you know, how much this is a sort of model that they'll be able to do elsewhere, or if it'll just kind of be a one-off thing just to see whether, you know, what can be done. You know, the land bank, the big question with the land bank is always like, how can we get the most bang for our buck? You know, our budget is, you know, not that much. We don't really spend that much money on every building that we acquire. How can we make the most impact with the small amount of money that we get to kind of promote neighborhood stability, you know, get people living in homes and who will stay in those homes and support people who, you know, aren't, you know, bajillionaires trying to, you know, what should we do with this money? And I think they're still kind of figuring it out. The money is largely from the state, from a big bank, from a settlement against the big banks in connection with the financial crisis of a decade ago. Another thing that the land bank has sort of been eyeing for a while, and at the meeting, the director, Tony Tazzi, talked about how he just reached out to the deputy mayor and the assessor about this. The land bank would like to get first look at all the properties on the city foreclosure lists and be able to make an offer and potentially buy those properties before they go out to the general public. I'm not sure that proposal is going to fly. I reached out to ask City Council Member Anasha Cummings about like what he thought the likelihood that something like that would happen, because it would require a change to the city code. Like, the city council would have to approve a change in the city's laws to make that happen. I think the justification for it would be that, well, you know, the land bank is this city supported entity. Its goal is neighborhood stabilization. It can partner with a lot of different organizations. It can get outside money. It partners with like CDTA and or like state affordable housing agencies. So if it got first look, even if it might not pay the most money for parcels, you know, maybe that would be good for the city overall. But, you know, I can see that there might be some skepticism from some people who might say, well, you know, that's just not fair. You know, why should this nonprofit, you know, get first look at these properties before the rest of us do? And I asked Anasha about it, and he basically said, well, I don't know if that first look thing would actually come to fruition, but the land bank is increasingly getting, you know, a better odds in the foreclosure process as it is, because they have a track record and they have funding, and we've seen what they've done. So it seems to be kind of trending in their favor anyway. So maybe it's unnecessary. Other stuff, two other land bank things, more briefly, 288 10th Street. This is a property that the Stewart's project on Hoosick, you know, the Stewart's is kind of expanding and has opened that, or I don't know if it's open yet or it's about to be open, but this big souped up new Stewart's, on Hoosick, to be able to build that new Stewart's, they bought and moved a house one lot south, a whole row house. They picked it up and moved it. And then they are donating it to the land bank, and the land bank's about to take title on that. And they want to have, they're going to have a ribbon cutting ceremony on October 26th at 10 a.m. And the property was lived in before they bought it, but now it needs like mechanicals and other sorts of, it needs a little bit of work, but I think it's been a touchy subject in that neighborhood because just Stewart's, you know, they're buying a lot, and it was just a lot of change for that block, I think. So the director said that he really wants to market that property to a potential owner occupant. So if that's you, I guess you could go to the open house on October 26th. And then lastly, and this is a property that's only about a block from here, 3235 7th Avenue. It's a big brick three-story, I think, property. And from the outside, it looks quite fine. But I'm told that, or rather the director, the land bank director said that it looks, quote, literally looks like a bomb went off. Apparently, it has basically no floors anymore. It's just like a shell. And the land bank had included this on a bundle of properties that the city was going to demolish. And not to get too in the weeds here, but the land bank usually has the city demolish their properties for them and then gets reimbursed for them, because the city can get like a bulk deal on all the dilapidated properties around the city that they get demolished. So this property was literally on the list to get demolished. It was going to be demolished like as soon as this week, I think. But in the debt and like the last minute, some roofer slash mason who's also kind of associated with Minow Associates, which is like a Brooklyn-based firm that bought the Cannon Building, that big building in Monument Square, and also bought the Irish Mist Building in South Troy. I mean, he's also bought some other properties around town too. I think the idea he does takes on these sort of smaller scale rehabilitation projects because he's a roofer and mason, so ostensibly his costs are lower. He doesn't have to contract that out. Anyway, he made an offer at the last minute, and he wants to save it somehow. I don't know how. I haven't talked to him, but it sounds like it's a real job. So the board kind of debated, well, should we let him buy this? And if we, you know, it is supposed to be demolished, and we did already say, like, man, this property can't be saved. And if we take it off the demolition list, but then before we, but after we take it off, but before we actually give him title, what if suddenly there's an emergency and the building needs to be demolished? Then we'll have to pay for that out of pocket, and we won't be getting that bulk deal that we got with the city. So is it worth it? They basically eventually voted like, yes, we will take it off the list, but only if we get a report first from an engineer that says we can probably take this. It's not going to imminently collapse if we, you know, and so they're not taking that risk. So that's sort of where they stand on that. So it seems like the guy's going to get the building and it'll be preserved, which I guess is good if you, you know, kind of try to, if you generally believe in the idea of preserving buildings rather than knocking them down, you know, it seems like a, you know, maybe a step in the right direction. Yeah, yeah, maybe.
Good.
How are we doing on time? Are we?
We're okay at the moment.
Okay, great. I'll keep going. The budget hearings have been going on at City Hall. There's more tomorrow for the planning committee, or the planning department rather, and then also the general services committee, which oversees a whole bunch of departments in the city. So that's tomorrow night. Last week, one of the departments to give a presentation was the city's law department, which is basically only a couple people. The main person who runs that department is the city's corporation counsel, basically the city's main lawyer, and his name is James Caruso. He's been there for almost the entire time of the mayor's tenure. And one of the lines in his budget that got some scrutiny from the city council, although it really wasn't much of a change from last year, was that he's requesting about $300,000 to spend on consultant services, basically other law firms that the city hires to handle certain cases. You know, you might think that, you know, the city gets sued all the time. This is not atypical, right? All cities get sued a lot. For everything from more mundane things like I slipped and fell on this, you know, sidewalk, why didn't you fix it, you know, pay me X amount of money, to more serious matters. Not that people can't be seriously injured in the like in slip and fall kind of cases, but to things like, you know, one of the big lawsuits that the city is facing right now is the Edson Thevenin widow case. Edson Thevenin was the gentleman who was shot by police on the College City Bridge a couple of years ago. His widow has brought a claim against the city of Troy. It's a federal civil rights lawsuit. And actually, interestingly enough, that case may go to trial as soon as this spring, if there's no settlement reached. There's also a couple of the other kind of pending lawsuits against the city right now are there are a couple of cases or claims brought by people who were trespassing at the Leonard Hospital site in Lansingburg, that dilapidated hospital, and they fell and allegedly injured themselves.
Yes, clearly the city's fault.
I guess the courts decide these things. You know, it's way beyond my pay grade, but I would imagine it would depend on, like, you know, how clearly was it marked? Was the building secured? You know, what, you know, I don't know the case law in terms of that sort of thing. But anyway, those cases could go to trial, or the city could opt to settle them. Another thing that came up in the news, actually, if you remember when the One Monument Square case or prop plant for the Bowtie movie theater fell apart, Bowtie then brought a claim against the city, basically saying that the city should have told them before they entered into this deal, like, that, oh, you couldn't sell this parkland, or the city should have done more due diligence or whatever. The Times Union just reported that next month the city might consider settling that lawsuit and paying Bowtie something around $70,000 to settle that claim, you know. And you know, James Caruso, the corporation counsel at this meeting, explained, you know, that the city's always kind of making this calculus of, like, oh, if we let it go to trial, then we could risk incurring a really, really big judgment, or we could settle the case, even though we don't necessarily think that the claim would stand up in court. We don't want to take that risk of, you know, risking a jury trial and, you know, whatever else. It also depends on, you know, what the plaintiff, the person making the claim, what they're sort of seeking in terms of damages, you know, and whether the two parties are so far apart that they can't come to an agreement or not, you know. But to, just to give everybody a sense of like what who these law firms are, so he kind of itemized the for the current fiscal year the amount of money that we've spent to date on these contracts with other or these rather these arrangements with other law firms that help out the city. One is Goldberg Sagala, which we've paid $80,000, which and that's the law firm that the city uses for union claims and grievances and arbitrations, like with the police and fire unions when they bring claims. We've spent $63,000 to pay Fitzgerald Morris Baker Firth. That's the law firm that we're using to handle the Edson Thevenin lawsuit. $126,000 to Pattison, Sampson, Ginsburg, and Griffin. They handle all sorts of different cases, including those two cases with the Leonard Hospital site. $17,000 to Harris Beach for land use cases. And if someone sues over a decision made by the Zoning Board of Appeals or by the Planning Commission. And then $4,500 to Merenstein and Merenstein for bankruptcy cases. And then we're spending another $70,000, or we intend to spend another $70,000 for litigation expenses, which is like when you hire a expert witness to come testify and say like, oh, I've examined the medical records of this plaintiff and actually they were already suffering from this malady before they brought this claim or, you know, something to that effect. I included this quote in my newsletter, but all told, James Caruso said, it is extremely expensive to defend the city of Troy. You know, lawyers are inexpensive. Right. No surprise if you just heard what I just said, but I don't think any of this is out of the ordinary for a city of Troy's size and type, although, you know, you'd certainly like to see our police department act in a manner in which we would not get sued for and not get these types of claims brought against us. But, you know, the claim has been made, and so now the city has to pay for at least, you know, I think that if an outsized judgment in the trial were rendered against the city of Troy, in that case, insurance would cover a chunk of it. I don't know how much of it. That law firm that we hired was actually, James Caruso said, was like our insurance carrier, basically the city's insurance carrier basically said, you have to hire this law firm. So that was the law firm that they assigned to us. That's a little in the weeds for how our city works, but just, I thought it was interesting. Probably people don't know that our city's corporation council, which is basically just like our city's corporation council, he has like a couple of deputies who handle a couple of different of things, and that's it. So they don't actually litigate all of the cases, all of the claims that are brought against us. We contract that out.
Can you tell people where they can read your full story?
Yeah, tinyletter.com/Troy_letter is where you can sign up, or if that's too confusing, you can just email me at luke.s.nathan@gmail.com.